Hello and welcome to the Conduit's podcast series on humanizing investment. Inspired by Gillian Tett's book, Anthrovision, this series will focus on inspiring the next generation of investors to recognize the value of responsible investing. I'm Asha Ladd, Chief Investment Officer at Conduit Capital. In each episode, I will be talking to a responsible investor in the impact space, getting to grips with each of their stories, understanding what led them towards a career in the space, and how they feel we can begin to humanize the finance industry. My guest today is Rosa San Giorgio. Rosa's career represents in some ways the evolution of the responsibility investment space over the past 20 years from a seemingly conventionally investing role to an intentional one. She is currently head of ESG at Pictet Wealth Management. She previously held leadership roles at several European banks, from IMI Bank, now part of BNP, Societe Generale, and Capital Italia, now part of UniCredit, and most recently leading the sustainability and impact investing effort for Credit Suisse Investment Management. So Rosa, thank you for joining me today. Love to hear a bit more about your career, but also your journey and arrival to the responsible investing sector.
Thank you for asking, Asha, and thank you for inviting me here. My father is a psychiatrist. And when I was a kid, I was often in his office and beautifully laying in a chaise longue and reading Freud and Jung. So my career was planned when I was a teenager to become a psychiatrist. I loved, you know, human behaviors. I loved to read dreams and so on. And then just before deciding where to go to the university, I saw a film. I saw Wall Street with Michael Douglas. And he was buying and selling on the floor, and I loved it. I loved the energy. So I said, that's what I want to do. So that's why I studied economy. And shortly after starting my studies, I realized that there was a lot of fiction, because technology already then, and we're talking about the 90s, was all over. So not a lot of people were buying and selling. So my career developed into portfolio management. So I started buying and selling securities for private clients and institutional clients. So it started really with the emotion of having a look at what shall I buy next so that I can maintain the wealth of my clients and actually increase the wealth of my clients. And it was exciting at the time in the 2000s. It was really active management. My day was spent into looking into companies and deciding if, I don't know, the Nestle or L'Oreal would do better, or and offer those advice in the form of portfolios for clients. And then started managing for institutional investors. At the same time, I felt that I wanted to give back. I come from southern Italy. I felt like I had a lot of opportunities others didn't have. I felt successful, wanted to give back. And you know that when you start giving back, you realize that it's very difficult to give back, because as soon as you give back, you receive more. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, was volunteering. And one of the volunteering experiences that shaped my career was with an organization called World Fund. World Fund is an organization based in Brazil and works across Latin America, and in particular works with kids in favelas. They want to keep kids in favelas. They want to keep them educating themselves. And together with having programs for teachers, so they teach teachers how to teach better, they also have role models. So I went to Sao Paulo for 2 weeks. Every day we would visit 3 different schools, and I would tell my story. You know, I come from southern Italy, I studied, I got excited about economy, and now I am a successful woman. You can change the world if you study. And one lady, now she's a lady, but back then it was 2010, and she was, you know, a teenager, raised her hand from the back and said, Rosa, I mean, it's all nice what you're telling us, that if you study we can change the world, but what are you doing to change the world? And I felt empty for 1 second. I felt that, yes, I was there to inspire them, but was that enough? So on the flight back, coming back to Zurich, I was thinking, you know, is it enough to have 2 parallel lives? One in which I enjoy, I make money for my clients, and the other one in which I try to give back. And this was, let's say, a little bit my haha moment. when I started looking around, what can I do better? And then it was the moment where I went back to the basics of what's the financial industry. The financial industry is that bridge between people with money and people with ideas. And we have to go back there. And that's, so I did an experience in Uganda, working with microfinance. And then I realized that actually I could be very impactful staying where I was, working with institutional clients, working with private clients, and ensuring that they were connecting their wealth to the real economy, ensuring that what we were doing in increasing their wealth was also invested in the future they wanted to see. And so that's where we started, first of all, with institutional clients, with exclusions, covering the reputational risk, and then slowly going into looking at how do we want to shape the future of work and how investments can make that happen. And that's why, you know, I built, first of all, my role within the organization I was.
So you created that role for yourself. You prepared business plans and...
I created the role. It sounds like, you know, big words. What I did is, yes, I started talking to people in the organization, preparing business plans. At the beginning, I mean, obviously, I didn't get anywhere. It took me 2 or 3 years. And then finally the world was changing. A lot of institutional clients were coming in that direction. There was the need for the competence to be built. So the organization decided to create that role. And then from that role, expanding. And now, I mean, in the organization where I am, it's not only about creating specific solutions that are responsible, but transforming completely the wealth management so that our wealth can contribute to the future that we want.
Yeah, thank you, Rosa. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because what I hear you saying is, you know, there was this moment where you were trying to fulfill yourself in who you are as a person. You know, there's the element of giving back, and then there was doing your job, which you equally like in equal measure as well. And being a practitioner in the industry has a lot of good skill sets and how you can leverage the financial markets to work in sync with both of those elements is quite important. And it's great to be able to see that you created that moment to, as well as the markets coming, to create a role which would enable you to do that successfully with the skill sets that you have.
Absolutely. And the convergence of the side of the two sides of my soul, as I call it, it was magic for me, because now I do not actually feel the need for volunteering anymore, because what I'm doing, I would say, you know, 8 hours a day and for 5 days, but actually is, you know, 24 hours a day and for the full week, is, you know, moving into that direction. And if I can, with what I do, bring some of our riches, of our wellness to, you know, something that we want to change for the future, that's my success.
Yeah. So I'd love to go to the current moment in shortly, but I'd love to start where, you know, you started to see elements of that in your day-to-day work. I think you talked to MCB about, you know, technical and index investing and how you were picking and selecting certain securities and stocks as well. And then the idea of how exclusions came in. I mean, talk to me about that evolution, how it went from recognition of exclusions to where you've ultimately culminated today. And what was the reaction from, you know, your peers and the idea of, I mean, now exclusions are quite normal, whether it's listed or illiquid, but just as that started to become a concept, where did the discussions kind of go and conversations that were had around it?
Yeah, it was the beginning of the 2000s, and I was serving, let's say, pension funds, sovereign wealth funds. And they were starting thinking about, the reputational risk of investing in some specific industries. We are talking about the tobacco industry, talking about the oil and gas industry. And the pension funds, treasurers, or those that would decide the allocation of their investments, were concerned that the beneficial owners would not be happy in seeing some of these high-risk activities in their portfolios. And it was at the same time the moment in which a lot of investors, institutional investors, were moving from active to passive, you know, to save a lot of costs. And so the two, let's say, journey combined together, because they wanted to go into passive, but they didn't want to invest in reputational risks. So what we were doing is that we were trying to understand which type of sectors or even specific stocks we would exclude without reducing what we call the tracking error of their investment, because they wanted to be close to the index. And that actually was the challenge. So we were working a lot with index providers to ensure that even if we would exclude some of the securities from the portfolio, still the performance would be aligned with the normal indices. And then when you start doing this job, even with the clients, you realize that you're doing a little bit of magic. You're excluding companies that they will not appear in your portfolio, but are you directing capital? Not yet, because you are recreating the same investments in just another form. So slowly, I think institutional investor realizes that that was a bit of a makeup, the exclusion piece. And if they wanted to direct capital in a more positive way, they needed to slightly change the approach. And I think, you know, a key moment for actually, I think for the world, but in particular also for the financial industry, was 2015. Because the UN came out with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So they gave to humanity 17 goals. Those are goals for everyone.
Common goals. Yeah.
Common goals. And they, you know, they were thought for governments, for countries, but we all have those in mind. It's about no poverty, it's about education, it's about climate change. And this gave a little bit of a spin in the financial industry. They started thinking, okay, is environmental, social, and governance characteristics, the ESG thing, about the risks, or it could be opportunities. And that's what the SDG gave. It's like, okay, we need those trillions in these topics, in these themes. Not everything can come from the public. It needs to come from the private. We need to collaborate, and we have now targets. We have some objectives. And that's where the tilt to, let's say, the promotion of environmental, social, and governance characteristics and, you know, the impact wave started materially in portfolios, because we could somehow visualize those goals and those objectives.
Yeah, and interesting, because, you know, you could even think about what the, you know, investment industry perceive as an opportunity. The same side of the coin is also intentionality. What they say about intentionality, they can be in lockstep.
Absolutely. It's extremely important, because behind the intentionality, there is the thought. And when you are thinking about making an impact, you need to, it's not an immediate transformation of, in investment. You need to, first of all, get some information behind, get the data, understanding which is the correlation between the output that you create and the impact. Is the impact negative and positive? And for all this, you need to have the intentionality that glues everything together. And obviously, the next step into the, let's say, the journey towards impact investing was thinking about the additionality. Is enough for me to invest in a public company that does good for having an impact as an investor? That is the company's impact. Is less the investor's impact. As an investor, I need to engage with the company. I need to vote at the company to have my own impact. As an investor, to be additional, I need to invest in those companies that do not have the capital, probably in the private equity market. And then the last piece, you know, of this, you know, intentionality, additionality came with, once that we have developed all this idea and thought about the intentionality and how we can contribute to the additionality, but how do we measure it? So the measurability, the fact that, yes, we can all have the intention to go there. We can be additional with our money getting in. But are we measuring? Are all the things that we are doing effectively creating that impact? Or there is some results or some consequences that we didn't expect? And that's why the three aspects are extremely important.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So to just talk about your role at Pictet, you know, obviously head of ESG, and, you know, from what I read on your bio, it sounds very broad, from like creating new solutions to what you were saying, tracking performance, adapting existing portfolios to be more responsible. And, you know, I suspect, Rosa, that's also intentional, and it's a role that you intentionally called out to quite broad. I'd love to understand, you know, why you believe it's important to have such a role created in such a manner, you know, to be thinking across the these different elements and aspects?
I think, you know, that the majority of financial institutions today, if not all, you know, have created this type of role, because, I mean, this is extremely important for everyone today. And there are a lot of shades of gray, but there are two, let's say, extremes. One extreme is the one of creating a dedicated role, a dedicated department that does environmental, social and governance, that does impact investing, that is separated from the rest. They really only concentrate on that, build the best solutions. The other extreme is that you have everyone in every department of an organization looking at ESG and build, you know, bottom up the things. And if you create a dedicated department, you have a lot of competence and you know, you can have leading edge solution, but all the rest of the organization is going in a different direction. If you create bottom up, everyone needs to look at ESG, you create a lot of inconsistency. Teams may interpret the environmental, social and governance characteristics of company or the metrics to be used for impact very differently. So you create inconsistency. What we have tried to do with the role that I have is to have a dedicated, I call it incubator hub, you know, where I and my team sit. And we support the rest of the organization to go into the direction of the transformation. So we create that consistency. We develop solutions, we study, we build content and competence, and then this competence is distributed and used by the rest of the people in the organization. So, for example, we build process on how we engage with companies and our voting guidelines when we vote, but then we need the analysts and the portfolio managers to be with us and engage with the companies and consistently vote.
So actually like an educator role in a sense as well.
It's there is a lot of education, but I would say that we are more co-learning because it's not that we know everything and we distribute. It's more we are creating awareness and we are dedicating our time to go deeper in the content and then distributing the content.
And so, you know, I'd love to talk about, and you touched on it before on those three areas about the importance of transparency. And, you know, the need, I think you talked about the need to create, at least when you and I were speaking about the need to create internal and external awareness. Why do you feel like transparency is so important? And how do you think that's going to be achieved?
When I, and we go back to, you know, to my studies and my career, when I studied economics, when I saw the film Wall Street, working in banking was cool, was really cool to be there. And today it's not cool anymore. And the reason why it's not cool anymore is that because what we have built, the financial industry, the bridge between people with money and people with ideas, we have built a sort of a tower on that bridge. We have built a bit of a black box. And that's what the financial crisis was. It was, you know, there's this black box of the financial institutions. What's happening and why is not transparent? And I believe that we have a unique occasion to go back today, be that bridge and be a lean bridge. In order to do so, we need to be transparent. And the transparency is within the value chain of the organization, is the transparency for us as investor to have transparent data from the companies that we are investing in, require those data from them, have comparable data from them. Transparency is about sharing transparently how we use those data in our investment process. The whole problem of the greenwashing comes from the fact of the distinction between integrating these environmental, social, and governance characteristics and then those characteristics being a driver for the investments. If you only have those information, but you don't use them as a driver of your investments, this is not responsible investing. How do you use those information in your investment process is extremely important. Transparency is about the reporting that we give to clients, so clients understand where is my money going and how is my money contributing to the future. So this transparency is an internal transparency that we give to our clients so that they can understand better where they put their wealth. And once that they understand better, and this is the awareness that we create in the investor, once that they understand better, they become more connected with their wealth.
Yeah. I mean, and that's not an old practice. I mean, if, you know, looking at the private alternatives markets, you know, when you look at, make an investment, you obviously, part of the due diligence process, make financial projections and the investment is made. There's a quarterly review, internal and also then externalized to investors and communicated to investors. And part of that internal review is to say, are we at business plan, behind business plan, ahead of business plan? And it's that learning in a sense of if we're not at business plan, what are we doing about it? You know, if we are a business plan, how are we going to work to achieve more? And so it sounds like it's some of that practice that just needs to get imbibed in. And that transparency is also the loop, the life cycle of making an investment, the life cycle of creating value in that investment or in the investment that you make, and then ultimately, exiting that investment in a manner that you know is going to create the transparency level that all parties and all stakeholders understand where you're driving to.
Absolutely. And transparency is key for collaborating. And, in order to achieve, a better future for all, we need to collaborate. Without sharing, we can't collaborate. And transparency is key to create that trust to move forward. One of the key things that we did in the organization I'm working with is internal awareness. So each and every employee goes through an internal responsible investing training for knowing what are we doing, which are the data that we have, how do we distribute. So the knowledge needs to be distributed, and so only in that way can be lived.
So, you kind of covered some of this before, but how is Pictet responding to ESG in the lens of impact investing?
So what we are doing is, on one side, we are fully integrating environmental, social, and governance characteristics in our investment process. We simply believe that these additional lenses, this additional information, enable us to make better investment decisions. So this will enable us to produce alpha or produce more performance in the long term. Mm-hmm. So this is, really a base. We need to have this information, and we are treating those information very carefully. We have a lot of very different data providers. We look at the correlation between those data. There's not one data provider that is good for everything. So we take this very seriously, and we distribute all the information. But apart from looking at the financial materiality of environmental, social, and governance characteristics, what we are also looking at is which is the impact that we are making with our investments. And those are two separate things. Mm. One thing is the influence that environmental, social, and governance characteristics of the companies have on the performance of your portfolio. Different thing is what the companies that you have or you are investing in have as an impact on the environment.
And can you give us an example of that, just so we...
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So... on one side, we are looking at, the composition of the board of a company. Mm-hmm. If there is enough diversity in the composition of the board of a company, because we believe that if there is diversity of thought in the board of a company, the company will perform better. So this is something that it's very important for us, and we look at it. On the other side, what we are looking at is that, with the products of the company, and the output that the company creates, how is this contributing to the SDGs? How is this contributing to a different world in the future? How the greenhouse gas emission of the company are calculated and transparently distributed? Are they aligned with net zero? So those are the two aspects that we look at. And clearly, because of how we have developed, in the financial industry, our data models, the first part, the financial materiality on the performance of the company, there we have a lot of data because it's everything about the company. When we look at the impact of the company on society and the impact of the company on the environment, this is more difficult. On the environment, we have a little bit more data because we have a lot of science we have a lot of science that tells us exactly the how from the greenhouse gas emissions we get to the 1.5 global warming. On the social part, much less. And it's much less because we are still studying how if a company creates jobs in a specific countries or in a specific sector, how will this affect the level of poverty of that region, of that sector, the level of education of the region, of the sector? So there are models that we are building in place, but it's much more vague, the relationship between the output of the company and the effective impact. And this is what we are studying.
And that's probably where transparency comes in, right?
Absolutely.
So transparency of reporting will enable that understanding to happen, to be able to calibrate those models, because we're at the stage of all creating the models, creating the reporting. Now they'll need to work in a life cycle of working together, in a sense.
Exactly. So when we talk about the impact metrics, we are talking, yes, about greenhouse gas emission, but we are talking, for example, at the waste or the water used and etc. So those are the impact metrics that we are looking at, and we want to be transparent, because once that we are transparent of those, let's say, output that will have then an impact, then you can think about how do I change that. And how do I influence the company I'm investing in so that this changes? But, you know, and this is actually the whole journey that we are in. So the part of integrating environmental, social and governance consideration, this is, you know, a status quo. This is important to deliver better performance to your clients in any way. And then where the journey is and the direction of journey that we have is more into the direction of having a look at how do we impact society, environment, how do we monitor that, how do we report that, and how does it the future look? And this across asset classes, because we are talking obviously about public markets, about fixed income, but also about, you know, what happens in the alternative space, in the private equity. And obviously, depending on the asset class, the transparency that we have of data
changes.
The availability of data is different.
And so, you know, as you alluded to, obviously, you know, this is works all towards clients, right? Because obviously it's the client's needs and the clients that you're serving. And so how are they, you know, how is sustainability and impact investing affecting your business and the conversations you're having? I'm assuming that they're probably quite disparate, and maybe disparate across asset classes, disparate across where people are, and, you know, in terms of, you know, managing their wealth for growth or managing their wealth for capital preservation, you know. So it'd be great to hear a bit more about how that's factoring into your thinking.
Yes, we have very, very diverse conversation with our clients. There are some clients that come to us as institutional investors were in the early 2000s, telling us that they want to simply exclude companies. They want to limit the risk into that direction. We have a lot of clients that are actually looking more at the opportunity side. They know that, for example, in the medium term, the way we produce energy will be different. So they want to be investing in those innovators in the industry. There are some clients that come with their ethical part. They are saying, you know, my foundation is investing in education and kids. I just want to be sure that my investments are going into the direction too. I don't want to be investing or supporting companies that are, let's say, have controversies on child labor, for example. So we have actually a lot of very different conversation going on, so very different perspectives coming in. But they all go in actually the same direction. And yes, there is a difference in terms of, you know, the locations. We see conversations that we are having are different depending on, you know, the origins of the client. There is definitely more awareness when we talk about with clients in Northern Europe, for example. In Europe in general, also because of the regulations that are coming up, a lot of the press is talking about those regulations, so people are becoming more aware. And there is also a lot of pickup in the Americas, both actually in North America and in the South America. Probably slightly different topics and themes are important, but, you know, a lot of pickup. And what I believe will be, you know, Asia will be a place where we are, where we will see a sort of a leapfrog, because what we are seeing is that the next generation in Asia, the next generation of entrepreneurs in Asia are very, very active into the impact space. So this is something that we are, it's quite clear.
Love to end on what your vision is for the world, and, you know, sense of mortality here, as I have said previously, but and what you're seeking, a world that you're seeking to live in and leave behind as well.
So today, there is a distance between the things that are important and valuable for humanity and the value that we give them. Water is extremely important for our survival. Forests are so important for our survival. Still, when we talk about the investments that we make, you know, we give them, you know, very low prices and sometimes no price. So I would love to see a world, and I think, you know, this is what we're trying to contribute to, a world that values better the things that we value. And this is the direction that I would love to contribute to.
Thank you, Rosa.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast of Humanizing Investment with The Conduit. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. Please do subscribe. To learn more about Rosa and her work, please go to PICTE's website. And for more information about The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com.